My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Unlock Your Potential with Jeff Lerner. So excited to be back with you, as always, getting to have amazing conversations with amazing human beings. Today, we are joined by Mike Scirocco, better known as C-Rock. If you have to pronounce his last name, you'll trust me, like me, you'll just call him C-Rock. It's a little easier that way. But no, Mike is a bona fide business stud. He was one of Yahoo Finance's top business leaders to follow in 2020. He was also number one on the list of top mortgage professionals in 2020 by Yahoo Finance. Just launched a partnership that I can't wait to hear all about, something he's doing with the luminary Grant Cardone and Grant Cardone organization. Mike is a big player out there. I was fortunate and blessed to get to be on his show, get to be a guest somewhere in the last year. I'll be honest, I can't pinpoint the date. And now I'm so grateful to have him here on Unlock Your Potential. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jeff. What's happening, man? I always like to start with gratitude on every interview. So thank you to you and thank you to your audience for showing up to listen. And I appreciate the opportunity, brother.
Oh man, gratitude is the name of the game. And I'm so grateful you're here. I had a great time on your show and getting to connect with your audience. And I'm excited to reciprocate. And I'm confident we're going to get into some wonderfully deep waters here. Let me start, since we kind of have a running conversation at this point. You know, do you mind just kind of catching me up? It's been, like I said, the better part of a year. Obviously, you had a huge year last year, doing a lot of crazy cool things. You know, you made those lists, so I know your brand has blown up and people are talking about you. But why don't you fill us in? What have you been up to the last year?
Yeah, well, actually, I'll just go back a little bit longer. Sometime in 2019. I just started getting this itch that I needed to be speaking and share my story and playing a bigger game, quite frankly. And I think a lot of us go through phases where we're kind of drifting. We might be doing well. We might be, you know, making it happen, might be making money, maybe not. But all of us at any stage, no matter what age or stage or where we are in our career, professional life, should be playing a bigger game and aiming to play a bigger game. And I had that feeling, that phenomena come across me, and I started seeking out mentors and teachers and coaches. And I ran into, obviously, Grant Cardone, you mentioned, read the 10X rule. It was the first time I'd heard of him. Mm-hmm. And was totally basically freed up and validated for the animal that I had inside of me that had been caged up
in the
previous years. And so I read that. I started immersing myself in his content, and just all of a sudden, everything started going better in my life, my relationships, my business, my finances, attitude, everything. And over the last year, I've been coaching and training, had the podcast, wrote a book called Rocket Fuel that came out in May, bestseller. And then I ran into a guy that was in tech. His name's Jared Yellen, and he had a successful tech company. And I talked to him. And he said, dude, why are you just in coaching? Like, you can't scale coaching, you know, like tech. And I'm like, well, I don't know how to do tech, whatever. Like, I don't even know what tech is. I just know that's an app or I don't even know. I didn't know, honestly, which is stupid now because I've advanced so much in the last year with this. But I don't have an engineering bone in my body. Neither did he. And he said that. And he said, I have a successful tech company. I have 40,000 paying users paying around $50 a month. And I've made myself obsolete in that business. And I've set out on a moonshot in my mid-30s now. And he wants to launch, build, scale, and sell 10,000 tech companies in the next 10 years with co-founders that have tech ideas with his infrastructure. And I said, dude, I don't know what the heck you're talking about, but man, I want in. Mm-hmm. And so I jumped aboard and we started on the journey with this incubator, and Blueprinted is one of the first companies out of it that's getting ready to launch here soon.
And Blueprinted is your business?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I want to get into Blueprinted, but if you'll permit me, I want to go a step backwards and let's talk about this 10X thing, right? This 10X rule. Cause listen, it's interesting. 2018 is when I read the 10X rule. And I get the sense that you and I had a similar experience of it, where it was like, it was almost like permission was given to think as big as we were feeling like thinking.
Yes.
And I know that was my experience. And in fact, the business that I have right now
which has exploded in the last 2.5 years since we started selling product, which is an ed tech platform, entirely germinated out of two things. I read Blue Ocean, that famous book, Blue Ocean Thinking. And I had this blue ocean idea, but I wasn't really seeing myself as the type of character, if you'll permit that term, character, who could bring that blue ocean idea to the market, because I wasn't this big in-your-face personality, right? And then I read 10X Rule, and it was like, well, that's just a choice. You know, if you're trying to do something, expand the size of your thinking and just ask who would I need to be in order to level up to that size of thought, and then just do that. And I did, and it's exploded. And so I think a lot of people misunderstand the 10X Rule. I think a lot of people misunderstand Grant, frankly, where it's all like this alpha hustle, sales, work harder, grind thing. But my takeaway from 10X, and I want you to talk about how you felt this and then applied it, is it's not about working 10 times harder. It's that when you think 10 times bigger, what you'll actually work on changes. And the types of ideas that you'll go after change. So talk about, assuming that we're on the same page here, can you talk a little bit about that and how you apply
it? Yeah. First of all, the people that don't get it, that's something that they're just going to have to come back and read it another time, because they're just not ready for it. That's all. And we should not go after it because some people get offended by it or don't understand it or don't get Grant or don't get me or you. That's their problem to figure out.
Right,
and so that's what that book did for me, is that validation to let the beast be the beast. And I also understand that I have no idea, none of us do, what our actual potential is.
Mm.
And so why would you set reasonable or realistic, quote unquote, goals and targets when you don't know what is truly realistic or reasonable? And really, when it comes down to it, when you have something that is realistic, that is something that is agreeable. So whatever you agree to becomes your reality. Right. So you start agreeing to bigger things, bigger think, bigger targets, bigger goals, then you will see that in your reality. And that's what it did for me. And, I just never feel like I'm doing enough now to be able to settle and relax. Like, that's not the game now. My window's shrunk. I realized that I should have read this before, but I didn't. So I'm not going to regret it. I'm just going to go harder and faster in the shorter window that I have now to make the impact that I want to make on this planet.
Yeah. But Mike, you're talking about, you don't know your potential. Didn't your teachers and your parents do a good job of defining your potential for you when you were growing up? And who the hell are you to suggest that they were wrong?
Well, with all due respect to teachers, we need teachers and I appreciate teachers, but they wouldn't be teachers. I know for a fact if they had any idea that their potential was where it was. And this may be controversial and it is what it is, but I believe that the people that are teaching schools and children have settled themselves. They've settled. And, I just, because they could still teach kids, they could still make impact, but take things to a higher level. Yeah. Where they're working more.
That's a good point. I want to interject so that people don't take what you just said and turn it so that they can reject it. You're not saying that, I don't think you're saying that service to children or the rearing of children is not a noble cause and that it's not a needed role. I think what I'm hearing you say though, is that doing it inside of today's school system limits the impact that you could have, and that any teacher that wants to make that type of an impact could probably do more outside the school system.
Yes. And it also, yep, exactly. And it also means that they've accepted and they are willing to participate in that curriculum, which is a limited curriculum, which is it's
the lowest common denominator, water it down nonsense.
And they're validating that curriculum, which that curriculum was for industrial age teaching and education. And so that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And they've compromised.
Amen. Amen. So you talk about unleashing the beast, or giving yourself permission, whatever language you use. What do you feel like? And obviously you were really successful before that. I mean, you're a booming mortgage company. You've done very, very well for yourself. But what do you think What were sort of the limiting beliefs or the baggage that you were carrying around prior to that? What was it? Where did it come from? And what did it really take to discard it once and for all?
Well, when I would think big, I would have the feedback wouldn't be good and you'd get kicked back, or, you know, I would have producers in my company that I was just keeping for production and they weren't aligned with my mission or values. Mm. And so when you do that, you're going to suffer at some point, and you can't blame the people that you allow in your environment. You have to blame yourself. You have to take responsibility because you're the one to let them in the environment. So what I've done now is I've got a greater hold on what I want out of life, my core values and my mission, which my mission is all people are unstoppable to live in the life of their dreams without negotiation, without lowering standards. And then what I do is I make sure my thoughts, words, actions, environment, and people around me are in alignment with that mission and my core values, which, you know, I have a set core values personally and what we use in our business as well. And those are fireable offenses in our business after one warning. We take it that seriously. We repeat it every day in our meeting, our core values, the five core values, which is acronym VITAL. And that's changed everything. And so now it's okay. When we hit a goal or target, we raise it up and go for another one. And we say, okay, let's see how far we could take this thing.
So let me ask you this then. You talk about values, vision, mission. You know, it's crazy how I think aligned we are. I mean, this has been the biggest experience for me over the last 3 years. Like yourself, prior to this, call it this awakening, you know, I had been successful. I'd made some money. I'd grown some business, whatever. But this shift into mission, vision, and values, we actually, in our company, we call it MVV, like MVV living, mission, vision, and values. Like your whole life, every single second of every single day, you should be able to map over your mission, vision, and values and see exactly how it fits, or else you need to change what you're doing if it doesn't fit, right? You know, am I on mission all the time, right? And getting clear and creating that personal, even separate from your business, just a personal mission statement to guide what am I doing every second of my life, whether I'm at work or not. You know, I've done that and it's completely changed my life. It sounds like you've done that and it's completely changed your life. And we're both grown adults who are pretty successful. It's not like we did this when we were 18 years old. I mean, this has been a recent thing, but it has transformed everything for me. What's it like for you now when you talk to people and you try to enroll them into this concept of like creating the change they want to see in the world and really defining the mission that they're out there to achieve in the sense of like, what are they going to talk about at my funeral that matters? You know, I always think about that. And what kind of a response do you typically get from people? And I'm just curious, like, what's your temperature check on how the rest of the world thinks about guys like us at this point? Are we nuts?
Well, first of all, like, you know, I pay attention to who I allow in my environment and who I give my time and attention to.
Yeah.
And when in doing that, we have three questions that we ask in a conversation. And generally it's, you know, people don't realize that we're really going through this, a process of filtering, but it's a process of filtering one. And it's also a process of being able to cause and create futures for people. And so, and by the way, causing and creating futures for people is a very attractive thing. It'll make people want to hang out with you, do business with you, be coached and mentored by you. When you can help them cause and create their future, and they see you causing and creating your future, your own future and others. So we basically go into what is this, something that you're most proud of from your past or accomplishments? That's the first question we ask. The second question is, what are you doing right now that's exciting you? And the final one is, what is the vision for the future? Like, what do you really have your sights set on? Like, what would be the thing that if you knew you accomplished it right now, that would light you up? What those three questions, and you listen and get the answer to those questions, will tell you all you need to know about a person, whether you want them in your environment or not.
Can you ask those questions again? I want to rehear them.
Yeah. The first one is, what are you most proud of that you've accomplished? Because then you'll find out the values of that person by that
answer
that question.
Do me a favor, Mike, ask them and then take about a 5-second beat so that anybody listening to this can really, really think about their answer to that question.
Yeah. So again, the first question is, what have you done that you're most proud of? And that gives you the values of that person. Think about it. If they're most proud of the money they've made, you know what their value. If they're most proud of something in their family, their relationships, their philanthropy, you know, you can even ask for a couple of things, but generally that gives you that, what they really value. The second question is, what are you doing right now that excites you or that's exciting you or whatever the case is? So then you're finding out, okay, are they mission driven? Are they on a mission right now that they're doing something intentional that excites them and lights them up? And finally, the third question is, what is the vision for the future? What would it be that you'd accomplished if you knew right now that you accomplished that would light you up right now? So then you find out if that person is future driven on a goal or target, and they have a vision for their future, because you don't want to be around someone that can't answer those questions.
So those are beautiful. I wrote those down. So I have two parts, follow-up question. One is, what do you say to the person who says, okay, and I'll put it in my psychobabble frame, but you know, they'll say it in different ways, but it's like, okay, you've got Maslow's hierarchy, right? And you got like survival, you know, you got food, shelter, then you have your needs, your desires, then you have your respect and love, and then you have community and friendship. And then at the top, you have this little self-actualization, right? Like the peak of the pyramid, and all this stuff that you're talking about, that's for people that already have a lot of money. They already have all their basic needs met. They already have friendship and respect and esteem and achievement. And so they have the luxury to think in these highbrow terms, but man, you don't understand how it is for little old me, because I'm still just trying to make ends meet, brah. Like, what do you say to that guy?
Well, I wouldn't spend a lot of time and attention on that person. So, and with all due respect, I don't want to be dragged into that. I think emotions are contagious. That's one of my vibes matter. Emotions are contagious is my first core value. And I don't want to be in association with someone that thinks that way. So what I would do for those people is I put out a lot of free content in my podcast and my social media for them to watch and use for themselves in their own time, in their own fashion, to get to a certain level where they have achieved survival. They've achieved some sort of success and they want to take it to the next level. Those are the people that I want to spend my time with and focus my attention on. Otherwise, they need to do some work, and I'm not the person to help them do that work except for my free content that I put out.
Yeah. Yeah, I second that. And I would add to it that for that, I understand. I mean, I used to be a broke jazz musician who got evicted from his apartment and needed, my biggest problem was finding a place to live. Like, I get it. But when you go full mission, vision, and values, I don't care what level you're at in this world, you attract better things when you operate at a better frequency. You will have an easier time getting that job that you need, getting that hand up that you need, getting that whatever that you need, if you're operating at a frequency that is mission-driven, not just needs-driven. So yep. I would suggest that to that person. Although, like you, I would also be very discerning about how much time I spent commingling my energy with theirs. My other follow-up question to you was, would you share your answers to those three questions? What have you done you're most proud of? What are you doing right now that excites you? And what is your vision for the future that would light you up if and when you accomplish it?
Yeah, the thing for me is the thing I'm most proud of is the role model that I've turned into and that I can be for not just my kids and my wife, but the people that at work in my organizations, my businesses, and all the people that follow me now. So that's, to me, is understanding that the decisions that I've been making are going towards my mission and not away from it. The things, the thoughts, words, actions, the environment, the people that I surround myself with serve that mission. So, and which then leads me into being a role model for you know, so many people. So that's, I think that's the thing I'm most proud of. The second question, what am I excited about right now, is the fact that we're going to create, you know, a marketplace in Blueprinted that is going to provide 15 million people the ability to be unstoppable at achieving something that they set out to achieve. And that platform Blueprinted it's exciting to work on, because my mission is that all people are unstoppable to live in a life of their dreams. And there's a lot of course content out there right now, a lot of mm-hmm. platforms that are underserving the clients, not getting the results that are necessary, because there's one key thing missing, and that is the granular step-by-step process to achieve something, not a course where people sitting there and absorbing and trying to watch and pay attention to and not get distracted, but actual actionable step-by-step guides to achieve things. And so that's what Blueprint it is. And that's what I'm excited about now. And then the future, what I have my sights set on for the future is we're going to exit that company for $15 billion. And I have another company right behind it called Tipperosity, which is going to start a generosity movement and increase the income for service professionals, whether they're valet, bellhops, waiters, bartenders, you name it, housekeepers, you name it. We're going to increase the income by encouraging and showing people that giving, when you give more, you get everything. So that's Tipperosity. So that's the, you know, the future for those two products and taking that stuff to our moon shop.
Man, I want to start with the last one first, this Tipperosity concept. It is hard to explain to people, but there is no greater investment on earth than being a good tipper. Like when you understand the service industry, and I used to be a musician, right? I used to play gigs where between loading in and lugging equipment and all the hours and hours of practice that went into learning the 30 songs that I played in the gig or whatever, like,
yep.
You know, I'm getting paid 2 cents an hour, but that $100 bill that one guy gave me at the piano bar that night, like that bought my food that week. You know, yeah. I mean, when you understand the life of a service business and that tipping, all tipping is repayment of service that you were given. It's giving back what you've already been given in the form of somebody else's time. Tell me, how'd you come up with this idea? I just think this is incredible. Tipperosity, this idea of improving the world through focus on that one simple act of tipping.
Yeah, I was in a hotel at the Fontainebleau in Miami, and I was getting out of the car, and the valet guy came to get my car, and I looked at my wallet, and I had $100 bills in there. And I was like, damn, you know, and I want to tip him 20 bucks.
Right.
But I had 100 and I'm like, you got any change? No, I don't have any change, man. I have to go to the front desk. And I'm like, oh gosh, that's so inconvenient. So first of all, I felt like a jerk not having something ready to go.
Right.
Then I get to the bellhop and my bags are getting ready to go up to the room. Same thing happened. And I'm like, do you got a change? Any change? No, you have to go to the front desk. I'm like, oh man. And this happens often to me. Unfortunately, I don't learn. I was just in Washington, D.C. this past weekend with my family, and we took the kids to the Eagles Redskins and some museums and all that. And I am in the same thing while we're developing this product. I'm dealing with the same thing. I'm like, hey, to my wife, you know, hey, hon, do you have any smaller bills? And she takes care of the tipping.
Right.
And so it just got to me one day, and I'm like, well, I'm in the tech space now and we can develop whatever we want. Why don't we create something that makes tipping easier and also has some kind of technology that is innovative that would get people to give more and give easier. And so that's where the idea came from. And now we're going to be actually, we have a friends and family night coming up in the next week or so for investing, raising money for the seed. And then we're going to have our angel network that's going to come into it. And we're raising the money for this one. I self-funded Blueprinted. But Tipperosity, we're gonna get more people involved because it's too big of a movement just for myself.
Yeah, that's interesting. Sidebar, you know, send me the info. I'm interested. I'm intrigued. Right, cool, let's say. Okay, and now Blueprinted. Tell me more about that. Is that a product that is like active out on the market right now? Is it still in dev? Is it in beta? Like, where are we at with that?
Yeah, so it's just now getting ready to come out into beta. We have the marketplace complete. We've already onboarded 34 creators to build their blueprints with them. So what we're doing is we're taking our specialists, like it's like a project manager that's going to build the blueprints with the creators, so the creators don't have to do the time intensive part of it. And we have people from real estate investors teaching people how to real estate invest, flip houses, start a podcast, publish a book, relationship specialists, brand luxury brand specialists, you name it. Creators, all different creators are coming in and we're building their blueprints. And a blueprint is, you know, it's got video capability, but it's not like a digital video course. It's got like maybe, you know, you put a 90-second video to explain a milestone and level a number of tasks that people are going to be expected to complete to achieve a predetermined goal. And then we're going to create a marketplace. You could think of like just like Audible, the website for listening to books. It's a marketplace just like that, different categories you can search for, different creators you can search for. and their blueprints will come up. And then you can buy their blueprints at all different price points. And when you buy the blueprint, some of the creators will give you more hands-on than others. Some will be hands-off and you just buy the blueprint and then you go about your business. And we're going to create a whole new world around people creating businesses around blueprints. You know, courses have their place, Jeff. Coaching has its place. Events and masterminds have their place. But there was this one key thing that I was missing all my life, and that was the granular step-by-step process to achieve something that I knew was credible, that I knew had been vetted, and I could just not even think and just follow directions. And that's what blueprinted is.
So I could say, you could come to, let's say, somebody like me and say, okay, you know, in 3 years, like I'll use myself as an example. I started making videos on my phone and posting my content on the internet, thinking maybe somebody in the world wants to hear what I have to say because I read this 10X rule and this Blue Ocean book, and suddenly I'm inspired, right?
Yep.
And then from that, I was able to parlay that into, let's say, a book deal 2 years later, right? And so I could put down I could go into your platform and create a blueprint to say, okay, here's how somebody who's never published a book, who's not a recognized authority in the public sphere at all, here's how you can go from zero to having a book deal with a major national publisher in 2 years. And here's the exact step-by-step granular blueprint that I followed.
Yep.
That would be maybe level one. And then if I was so inclined, I could add my own services, like a value add where, hey, I'll work with you hands-on, or maybe for an extra fee, I'll coach you or something.
Yep, exactly. It's a product. It could be an entry point into an ecosystem, into your ecosystem or community, a lead magnet. It could be a product in your product suite. You could have several blueprints like that. That whole process right there might be broken down into four different blueprints to achieve one big goal.
Like, you know, here's how to build your Facebook following. Here's how to build your YouTube following. Here's how to launch a podcast. And then here's how to get a book deal. Let's say.
Yep. Okay. Yep. And then how to become a speaker. And you know, you could put all that together, and there's going to be people that do one blueprint, and there's going to be people that do many. But again, this is a situation where you got blue ocean, red ocean, and then what we call a pink ocean. Okay. Because see, we didn't want to go too blue ocean, especially in any of our tech products in the incubator, because it's too time consuming and intensive to explain somebody a whole new thing, right?
Yeah, and to build technology is time and money intensive. So you don't want to do it on a wild idea.
Yeah. So we look for pink ocean. So pink ocean, for example, is, look, there's digital courses out there, right? There's all kinds of, but what is missing and what could be way better? And that would be blueprints, granular step-by-step process. Now, people could still have their courses. They could still do all that. But if you really want to get results for people, let's stop teaching them right now and let's get them acting, taking action. That's what's missing in a lot of cases.
So when does this platform go live? I mean, it's January 3rd right now. This episode will probably air by mid-January.
By then the marketplace should be up and running. And we should have some blueprints on there. And again, this is kind of a situation when you get into a creation of a product like this, it's the chicken or the egg kind of thing. We have to get blueprints in the system before we can open up a marketplace, right?
Right.
And while we have a limited amount of blueprints, we're going to be driving traffic to those blueprints specifically. And those creators will be driving traffic to their blueprints. And then there'll be some cross-pollination happening, right? But then as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's thousands of blueprints in there, then we can just drive traffic just to the marketplace itself.
Gotcha. Okay. Very cool, man. Well, I'll be excited to see how that rolls out. I'm in a related space. I wouldn't say we're direct competitors, but even if we were, I wouldn't care. There's a lot of room in this world for smart people. But
we'll be collaborating. I've already put this together in my mind, Jeff. You don't know this yet, but I cause and create futures for people. Remember?
I cannot wait for you to. I cannot wait for you to tell me my future. That'll be wonderful.
Hey, sorry for the interruption. I just wanted to let you know you can get a free copy of my book, The Millionaire Shortcut, which will show you the fastest way to become a millionaire in the new economy. And there's a special link just for this episode in the description. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode.
Okay, so you know, we're about halfway through this conversation. Let's back up. You're obviously successful, dynamic, high energy, big thinking guy, not a lot of negativity tolerated in your space. Nobody pops out the womb that way. So tell me what you had to go through to get to this place.
Well, you know, actually, I think that based on just my own observation and assessment of my life, I think that my mom knew the struggles that I was going to have growing up in the environment that I was going to grow up in, with a lot of broken people being in our family, a lot of drug addicts, alcohol, anxiety, depression problems, overdoses, suicide, divorce, you name it, right? Mm-hmm. I really think subconsciously my mom realized this, and she told me, I just remember from when 3 to 4 years old, I remember her talking to me about being an inspiration and that I'm going to be a leader and talking me up a lot about these things. Hmm. And then what I noticed as I was growing up in all this, I don't even remember my parents together, Jeff. It was, they split up before I could remember. Dealt with a lot of child abuse. Once I moved into my dad's house with my stepmother, I dealt with the child support battles, custody battles, conflict between step-parents and my parents, and all this crap, right? And one thing I noticed when all these broken people, which were all a little broken in some ways, but these are really, I think, on the higher spectrum of brokenness, they always had a story of why they were like that. And they would tell themselves that story and they would buy it. And then they would tell other people that story. And hopefully those people bought the reason that they were being the way they were. Then I started realizing at a young age, okay, really, we're just the story that we tell ourselves. Whatever story we buy, none of us know absolute truth. There's not a person on the planet knows exactly what happens when you die. There's not a person on the planet that knows exactly what happens prior to us being born. We all have our beliefs and a story, or you might even call it a lie, because if you don't know the absolute truth, isn't it really a lie? And so it's whatever lie you buy, whatever story you tell yourself. So I never bought these stories that these people were telling themselves. I would call them on their BS. And so their lie wasn't as good as the lie I believed in, which my lie was all people are unstoppable to live in the life of their dreams. They could decide to do that. They could start telling themselves a story to do that and then live out that life. They don't have to, and nothing has to happen first. Like you were talking about, to do what you're doing right now, you just had to be the person that was the person that does that.
Yeah.
That's all you had to do. Right. It's simple. We make it, we overcomplicate things. So growing up around this, a lot of stuff, if I wasn't going to buy their BS, I couldn't buy my own BS if I was going to tell myself why I couldn't achieve something. And so at a young age, that coupled with my dad throwing a $100 bill at me, there's a story that I tell in my book about, you know, after having enough of the abuse that I was going through and dealing with all the crap from about 8 to 10 years old, I told my mom about what was going on and she filed court papers. My dad, my hero, he was a Mason. He had his own brick company. Block concrete, very successful. I always looked up to him for how hard a worker he was, man. If he had the roughest hands, big forearms, he used to carry wad $100 bills around with him, and he showed me the money all the time. And I used to think, man, that's so cool. And when he got confronted, or he confronted me with the court papers that he got delivered one day after I came home from school, he basically questioned me and reminded me that my mom was broke. She had men coming in and out of her house because she was married 3 times, and why would you want to go into that environment and this and that? Totally denying and just basically not even realize or acknowledging what was going on there. I didn't get in discussion with him. And so he got upset. He takes a wad of $100 bills out, peeled one off, crumpled it up and threw it at me. So here, you're going to need this when you're living on the streets with your mother one day. And I was about 10 years old when that happened. And at that moment, a spark was lit in me that could not be put out, because I was never going to need that money. I was never going to let him win that based on that comment. And so for 30 some years, that coupled with the story that I was telling myself, I wasn't going to lose. And I've always, you know, used that moment as a charge when I didn't feel like doing something or things got tough. And right around the time I started reading the 10X rule, like you said, it was in my 40s at that moment. I started realizing, wait a minute, if I develop my engine and refine myself, I'm not going to be able to use that toxic fuel anymore that I used to use.
Yeah.
Right. I'm going to have to figure out some other higher octane fuel. And what I found was, once you develop yourself to the point where you're beyond survival and you're making progress, now you can start using your dreams and goals, because your belief lid has gone higher, and you can start using your dreams and goals as your fuel and let them pull you forward. And that goes faster and cleaner. So that's a little background of the process and the journey of where I've, you know, came from and where I'm going.
Man, isn't it funny? And I ask very similar questions to most of my guests, because I'm always, this whole show, Unlock Your Potential, right? I'm trying to get Like, what are the universal keys that unlock everybody's potential? And it's just crazy how similar these truths are and these experiences of people that have, you know, kind of reached a transcendent level of their potential. It's so funny how these things fuel us. For me, I had my ex-father-in-law, my ex-wife's father, there was a point where I had tried to start a business and it went out of business. I was facing bankruptcy. I was in a lot of trouble. And his daughter, my wife, was leaving me. And I was like, man, can you talk to her? Like, tell her to give me another chance. Like, I'm a good guy. And he said, you know, it's not my fault. You were so arrogant that you thought that you could get out of having a job and just go start some business and be this entrepreneurial whatever, right? Like, he basically used the term arrogant about my choice to go after something other than just trading time for money. I ran on that shit for like a decade, bro. Like, that one word, arrogant, I was every morning I was waking up at 3:30 going, I will show you arrogant.
Yep, right? Yep, yep.
And it's funny, about 3 years ago, like we're talking about, when I had this shift, it was like that fuel, my engine doesn't want to run on that fuel anymore.
Yep.
It's so crazy. I love the way you reframe it. You said when you swap out the fuel and now you're, it's like, if you're running on an experience that's smaller than who you've become, then it's a push energy. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you switch to running off of a vision that's bigger than who you've become yet, now it's a pull energy.
Yep.
And it's completely different.
Yep.
Yeah, yep, I feel it, man. I totally feel it. Anyway, so I didn't mean to hijack your story.
No, that's it. That. I love the feedback there, man. I love the feedback. So yeah, that's what it's become. And now it's just, to me, so if that's the case, like, based on my belief lid, I can set targets and goals that are out there. Then what do I need to work on? Well, I need to work on my belief lid and continue to increase the capacity of my belief system.
Okay, belief lid. I'm following the term, but if you wouldn't mind expounding for the audience for a second.
Yeah, and I believe that came from John Maxwell, the law of the leadership, lid. Right? Yeah. And there's the law of the lid, but you know, your belief lid, you just like thinking about a lid on top of a container or something. The higher that lid is, or if there's no lid, you have endless belief that you can accomplish or achieve things. So most people are dealing, 99.9% of people are dealing with some kind of limit or lid to their belief system of how much they can achieve. And so to me, you got to be always working on that. One thing in business, you're never going to have somebody come work for you that has a bigger belief lid than you do. Because
the law of the lid is that you are incapable of leading someone who has a higher lid than you do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you should always be working on growing your belief lid. And your leadership lid and all of your lids that would lead you to success. And then don't try to hire someone that has a higher lid than you, because you're setting yourself up for failure. They're going to come in, they're going to realize where you are, and then they're going to leave you. And it's just a waste of time. So, so that's the things I steady focus on and I'm always assessing, like, daily, like, where am I missing something? Where are my blind spots? What am I not seeing? And also, what am I not shooting for? Like, why am I not going high enough? Like, what is the one thing or things that are distracting me? Or I'm always obsessed with looking at those things. And then I'll achieve things. And when I achieve, I don't know if you've experienced this, but when I achieve things that I set out to achieve that may have seemed like big targets or goals in the past, it's not as big a deal as I thought it would be once I achieved it.
Oh,
and that goes to say, like, when I originally thought about it, how big and daunting it seemed was not real. It wasn't as big and daunting as I imagined it. So that tells me that I should even aim way higher, way bigger.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so it's all psychological stuff, but
Here's the thing. It is, but it's everything. It's all psychological. It really is. No, this it really is everything. I mean, I just came off, you know, we're recording right after the first of the year, right? We just closed the books. We did more, my business did more sales last year than I did in all my businesses put together in 9 of the previous 10 years put together. And there was like a little transition year that was the growth year. And then, I mean, it's a whole order of magnitude beyond anything I've done in the past. And here I am. And I'm like bored already with that.
Yep.
Like, no, we got a new moonshot. We got new targets. I told the team this morning, cause it's Monday. I said, it's January 3rd. We're already 2 days behind. I don't know about you. I didn't take the weekend off. We just came off the holidays. If the year starts on a Saturday, that is just God testing you to see how committed you are to your vision. Are you going to wait until the 3rd on a Monday to kick off the new year? You just had 2 months off. Give me a break.
Yep.
I said, guys, if you're just starting today on Monday morning, we're 2 days behind. Like, I'm bored with that already. It's so true what you're saying. But talk about this, because I think this is true for everyone. I don't think this is just true at a certain level of success, because wherever you are, there you are. And wherever you are, it's probably a function of your environment. You're always a product of your environment. You're all, like they say, you're the average of what you're surrounded by, right? And I think every time you reach a new level, you achieve anything, however big or small, the amount of validation and reinforcement that you get on a daily basis for being at that new level goes down. Because every level up, there's a lot fewer people at that level, right?
Yep,
and a lot more people below you trying to pull you back to where you were. So talk about how every time you go up a level, every time you achieve something, how do you re-fortify yourself so that becomes the new bare minimum and the next level up becomes the new desirable? And how do you keep iterating that process so that you don't get to a point where you're like, I feel alone. I need to go back down where it's safe and I have safety in numbers.
Well, you know, I think that from the start for me is setting the goal so far out there that it's very difficult to ever even achieve it. And then you're blowing away your other goals that you have because you're so far, like your vision is so far out there that, so that's for me. It's like, I have, you know, I want to sell this first tech company for $15 billion. I had to go lower than that before. And I was talking to the person at Salesforce and I said, you guys are going to buy this company for $4 billion in about 24 months. And they were like, why so low? They said that to me. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, I was just thinking too small, I guess.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, we just bought Slack for 20 some billion. Like, why would you say 4 billion? And I was like, you know, maybe I thought that was good enough, but I was wrong. So I raised it up. And so I can't, like, I've never had that kind of money, right? I've never been able to been able to make the choices that you can make when you have a company to sell for that. But, and I don't know how to do it, truthfully.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it. We're going to do it. And it's not a wish or a hope. That's the mission that we're on. What is it going to take? And we reverse engineered and broke down how many people we need in the app, how many average dollars they need to be spending, how much data we need to collect. And then once we did that, we got clear on it. It's like, well, shit, this isn't that big a deal. And it's not going to be that difficult, because we're clear on what it's going to take to get there. And then it becomes like, okay, well, let's just make it happen. Now, most people don't do that because they don't think it's possible. They don't think it's realistic. They don't think that they're cut out for it, or they don't know how. So they stop even trying. We don't operate that way. We're going to figure out the how, because somebody's done it before. First of all, somebody's done it already. So like, okay, so it's been done before. So we'll figure it out. And then we're going to create the attraction model by causing creating futures for people to bring people into our environment and ecosystem that can help us get to where we want to go.
So you realize, I know you know this because I know this too, that most people think that we sound crazy when we talk like this, right?
Yep, I love it.
Yeah. Exactly. I thrive on it. I just made a sarcastic comment on one of my Facebook ads, because you know, you run these Facebook ads and all the haters comment about how you rented your car and you pay your wife to hang out with you and take pictures with you. And it's all fake. And it's all,
I do pay my wife. Yeah. I pay my wife to hang out with me.
I pay my wife really well.
You just see all the packages that come to our house. I pay her damn right.
But anyway, I made a comment. I'm like, yeah, you're all right. I'm not even a real person. I'm assembled from discarded cyborg parts. And like, you caught me, you trolls, you busted me. But anyway, so people think we're nuts, but here's the thing. I have found, and actually, I encourage anybody listening, note it, like take note of the date. You've got two crazy people here talking to each other. that both think they're building multi-billion dollar companies. They've both never done it before, but they've both got a reasonable track record to suggest that when they do set out to do big things, they usually pull something big off. So just mark the date and circle back. Make a note. Put it in your calendar right now. 1 year, or maybe how long should we give, Mike? 2 years?
Yeah.
2 years from now, I want everybody listening to, if you don't have any interaction with me or Mike between now and then, although that you're in my audience of my show, so hopefully we'll talk again between now and then. But 2 years from now, I want you to follow up on both of us and see if we both built multi-billion dollar companies in 24 months, even though we've never done it before. And you'll realize we're not crazy. In fact, what we're doing here is we're pairing one of the most unusual combinations of things in the world, which is really, really big vision, but also really, really granular, consistent execution on the basis of making tiny bits of incremental progress incessantly and obsessively. That's it. Most people on this earth, they do one or the other. They either grind every day, but they lack the vision, or they get so into the vision and you go buy them a drink at the bar and they'll tell you all about it at 1 o'clock in the morning when they should have been in bed because they should have been up early to work on their vision, right? But the combination of both that Mike has and that I would offer up I have too, incredibly rare in this world, but also it's so basic. It's literally a formula. It's not as complicated. I mean, why do you think it's so hard to reach this place in this world where you couple big vision with daily consistent execution?
Well, and one other thing you should add in there too is the proximity to people and being around people that can help you get there. But it's just because people overcomplicate things. That's simply what it is. They overcomplicate things. They take failure as the wrong thing rather than taking it as a training session or fuel. They use it as defeat and discouragement.
Wait, say that one again. That was important.
Yeah, failure is a training session to be used as a training session or fuel, period. It's not for discouragement. It's not for defeat. Failure is a tool. And that's all it is.
It's
not
who you are. It's just something you learn.
Well, it is. It's who you are if you let it be who you are.
Right.
Like, we got a decision whether we want to be whatever. It's that decision. Like, you can be whoever you really set out to be. Now, physically, your abilities on, you know, like I said, like, physically, obviously, I can't dunk a basketball, man. I'm 5'6¾", you know. But that doesn't.
I'm 6 feet tall, and I can't dunk a basketball.
Yeah. So okay. So but you can't like do things physically. Maybe to a certain extent, you can do more than you've ever done before. I can tell you that you're capable of your potential physically to do more. But as far as intellectually, mentally, spiritually, and financially, you can be and do whatever you want to, you choose, and whatever you commit to and whatever you take massive action towards after that, it's there. It's truly there. And, you know, the other thing I talked about, that generosity movement, it's so important, because what I found, Jeff, is the more I give, the longer my money goes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not even talking about bringing more money in. My money lasts longer the more that I give.
About the best investment is being a good tipper.
Yeah, I don't need to know the science behind it. I don't need to know why it happens. I just know it happens, and I'm just going to keep doing it. So, look, and by the way, I'm a Christian. I've read the Bible back and front over and over again. I study other religions as well. They all start saying the same things when you start reading and studying all of them pretty much. And giving is a big part of a lot of religions, but I don't think that they share, and they're not, they don't frame it or explain really well enough why you need to do it. They don't share why you need to be grateful and thankful for what you have rather than what you don't have well enough. To me, I didn't see that when I was studying religions. I think that the most important thing to understand is that in your mind, our minds are made to work higher efficiency and clearer and more creative and with less limitations when you do good things, when you give more and you're appreciative of what you have. And then when you have that ability, then you can create more.
Yeah, you know, I think you just nailed it. This is why being a good tipper is such a good investment. Because when you give that money away, you start to act like the person who has the confidence and the creativity to replenish it and then some, so that you'll have that much more to give the next time. It's right. So bizarre, and it sounds woo-woo, and people, you know, 9 out of 10 people will resist what we're saying, but you just nailed it. You start to show up differently when you shell out differently.
Yeah. Quote that.
it's true. No, it's
Twitter.
It's,
tweet it.
Yeah. I'll make a note here. Okay. So let me ask you this. How old were you? You said you were in your 40s when you kind of had this shift toward, call it outsized thinking and achievement.
Yeah. 42, 41. Okay.
So what would you say if you could have accelerated that development process in your journey, what are some things you might have done differently? And bear in mind, I'm not asking you about regrets. Yeah, well, I'm not a big fan of that concept, but things you might have done differently to speed up that process.
I think that I needed the ingredients that went into me from all those years to get to that point. So
okay,
I don't know that if something were to happen differently, that I'd be able to be at the same position, because what I did when I went through my mentorship and coaching over the last couple of years is I really took what I was learning from Brandon. We talked about Brandon Dawson earlier. He's one of my mentors. Grant, Richie Dolan, some others that I follow. I look back in my life and say, okay, what was I successful with? And what are they teaching me right now that caused me to be successful? And the failures that I had and the setbacks that I had, what was I not listening to that they're teaching me now that I didn't, you know, didn't have? So I needed, to me, my past was like a timeline or a some kind of exhibit, I'll say, for me to go back and look and learn from. And based on the new things that I was learning, hanging around these super successful and wealthy people. So yeah,
there you go. I mean, I think you just nailed why I say I don't believe in regret. If you regret something, you know, you're essentially, the only thing to regret is how you responded or where you have arrived on the basis of something that happened to you prior.
Nah, but look, regret, what does regret do? Like, there's no positive outcome from regret whatsoever.
And so if you
like
have a regret about the past, the only thing to do about it is change the present.
Yeah, remove it. Just stop doing it. Stop regretting. Exactly. That is something that will cloud your subconscious mind up so bad that you will not be able to be creative and produce and be free flowing.
So what were some of the lessons that you were learning from your mentors in the more recent present that you look back on your life and realize you were not applying at that time?
Well, obviously the 10X rule, like Grant talks about, understanding going for potential and success is not an option. It's not something that you can think about doing. It's an obligation, a duty.
Yeah.
And so then from Brandon Dawson talking about like what you think is what you say is what you do becomes your reality, paying attention to that. And then from Richie Dolan, more than anything, is causing and creating futures for people and how that is an attraction. It causes an attraction model.
So let's camp on that last, we got a couple minutes left. Let's just kind of camp on that last one. If we could, this idea of creating futures for other people that, you know, it's like Zig Ziglar said, you know, help enough other people's dreams come true and all of yours will surely follow, right? That's kind of what you're saying, right? Talk a little bit about, you know, how you've seen this play out in your life and help maybe dispel the people that think, no, I'll give to others, I'll do for others once I'm on a good footing for myself.
Well, yeah, so I've just witnessed too many times that people are just kind of walking through life dead and drifting and roaming and just waking up doing this, like they're, you know, it's good to have a routine, but not a routine that's just keeping you in the same spot. No matter what, if you stay in the same spot or doing the same things, eventually your graph will fall because of gravity. As we call it, gravity, pull it down. So I think being able to not just sit there and let that happen to the people that you love and care about and the people that are around you, really taking full responsibility and saying, look, I have the ability to do this. I have the ability to paint a picture for you and push you and lead you in that direction. I think that's an obligation that, first of all, I don't know that anybody, like everybody has this mission or purpose put into them, but I know it for 100% sure that it's mine. And when I found that out and I realized that I have to take action on it, and I got to take it by the bull by the horns. I can't sit back and know that I was put in this position, the ability that I have to do it and not take advantage of it and help people, because it's like, man, this, everything that we do, say, decide to do, not do, affects so many people. Think about it. If you don't make somebody else's job easier that you run into that day, that person could go home. They could take it out on their kids. They could take it out on their family. Their kids get this attitude about them because their parents are short-tempered with them. And then they go to school and then they bully other kids. That other kid does something. It goes home and is a bad parent, bad to their parents. The parents get irritated with them. They go to work and then it affects all the employees at that job. And then it just expands outwards. So, you know, it's one of them things that I realized that the magnitude of our decisions and our actions and the lack thereof, and I'm not going to sit back and let that happen.
Yeah, I love you talked about your routine. I'm a big fan of words. I think that, like, you know, it's our basic unit of communication. We should probably pay some attention to them. And the word routine, the core of the word routine is a route. It's how you get where you're going.
Yeah.
It's your route, right? And your routine, like, to your point, it's meant to be getting you somewhere that you're not. Otherwise, it's not a routine. It's just circling the drain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, yeah. This is tremendous. Mike, I feel like we could riff for hours. I'm sad to say our time's basically at an end. We both got another meeting we got to jump to. Thank you 1,000 times over for being a guest on Unlock Your Potential. This has been incredible.
Thank you.
Before we sign off, how can the audience go get more of you, whether it's blueprinted or your businesses or just your content? Please share and invite people to come join whatever you're doing.
Yeah. So I have a podcast called What Are You Made Of? It's on all your favorite podcast platform. I'm on Instagram at Mikey CROC, Mikey CROC. And I'm on Clubhouse, the Wisdom App. I'm getting ready to start a new show on the Fireside. I'm all over the place. If you look anywhere, you'll find me under Mikey, MikeyCROC. And Jeff, thank you so much for having me, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.